Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Been a little while, I guess. It's been a little while. I have been MIA on these things. We've been doing the stream every Sunday, and frankly, I feel pretty good about that I've managed to actually fucking keep that going. But you know, I've been very remiss on getting y'all episodes for the pod for the week. So I'm doing five today. I'm dropping five of these. It's just quarantine stuff, life stuff. I did realize, you know, I just, so everyone knows if they care, I did order Dr. Nick a new microphone because I was going through and listening and I'm editing these to make them a little better. But I'm like, wow, my mic is a lot better than Dr. Nick's. And it's probably not as fun or soothing to listen to. Soothing? That's a little presumptuous, Jared. But you know what I mean? It's just like, I know it can be difficult, like listening to a phone call, basically. But I really like the conversations we have, so hopefully the substance wins out for that over the auditory experience. But in any case, you know, I've been doing a lot of stuff. One thing I want to just mention, I mean, some of you know, a lot of the folks who have come around for the streams every weekend have been doing it with me, but we're doing this quarantine calisthenics thing every day at noon on Instagram and sometimes on Zoom. It's just at my Instagram account, Jared_sleeper, or every day at noon is where I post all the previews of moves every day. And man, that's been great. Like, this little squad, the quarantine, has really come up around it. And that little community and that little daily ritual has been pretty great. We've done like, oh, I think 75. It's going to be 75th workout tomorrow, which is nutty. And it's just nice. This nice little supportive virtual group. And just between that and other little projects and then work stuff, working on ologies and stuff, it's just been hard to get these pods done week to week. And then that thing happens, especially if you have ADHD, where, you know, one little thing becomes a big pile of things. And then the big pile of things seems kind of fucking overwhelming and you just don't want to tackle it. So, you know, I'm making myself get all five of them out today and just kind of catch up. And I don't know, just feel so fractured sometimes, you know, identity. It's like a mix of, you know, my identity's fractured or I feel like a shapeshifter or something like that. And I guess it's interesting because, still, to me, it's, I don't know, it was coming up in the Discord today. There's a Discord now, the one that is the My Good Bad Brain Discord. I just converted it to include a quarantine channel and stuff like that, and it's been more active. And people were asking each other how they found QC, you know. And it's all these different routes, I guess, to my to my fucking thing. Like, some people were my Good Bad Brain listeners, and some of them are Ologies listeners, listen to Ologies. Someone knew me from Clever, seeing me on Cheat Day, stuff like that. And I was just thinking, like, that's how I've always felt, is this strange, it's a strange feeling, like nobody knows you or something. And it's like, who's to blame for that, Jared? Like, nobody knows you. What does that mean? I mean, some of it's you, and some of it's the world. Some of it's me, right? Like, well, if you feel like, why do I feel like no one knows me? That becomes like, oh, well, I guess it's because I'm not like putting my true self out there. What does that mean? Are you? Are you not? No, I am. I just feel like there's this part of me, this one thing that I really think I am, and I'm not doing that. Well, why don't you do more of that? Why? And it just turns into this weird thing. It's like, well, I don't know. Some of it's maybe just like a sickness of our society. You have to have your brand really locked down, you know, like literally everyone, not even if you're not like in the entertainment industry, like every individual, they want you to have your brand, like figure out what your job is and who you are and where you're supposed to go and what you do. So people can see you and go, oh, that's the guy who he bakes bread, you know, or whatever. So it's strange to just be this sort of public identity I put out there and doing this and you know, still feeling like rooted in theater, I guess, some kind of performance where it's like everything's just a skin you put on and it's all just as true. It's really strange. And I guess related to that, in this, which was the eighth episode, I believe, in this stream from a few weeks back, I kicked off with a question asking Dr. Nick, basically about like, why am I numb to kindness? You know, why when people say nice things to me, do I just, it goes in and out of me, or I, you know, reject it sometimes. So we talk about that a little bit. I've been trying to work on it more because I realize I think it's tough in my relationship. I think it's tough on everything, you know, when you don't think about it because, you know, we're raised this like in our society so often, whether it's just Catholic or Protestant or just like whatever, just that you, it's good to be a martyr. It's good to be bad. It's good to be like, no, I'm bad. I'm bad. Everyone else is good. That kind of a thing. And you don't kind of realize like, it's actually pretty rude to not be able to accept love or kindness. Like, especially if someone loves you and they feel like they can't get through to you and it just rolls off you. It's an easy way to make someone feel like you're not really there and, you know, you're really disconnected. And, you know, sometimes it's not our fault really, you know, sometimes it's depression stuff and ADHD stuff for me, big time ADHD. That's a really common thing with ADHD is people feeling like you don't care about them. And you're like, no, I do. I just, this brain is bad with things like short-term memory or getting outside of my own head and things like that, listening sometimes. So just been thinking about it and it was good to talk about that. Some questions from the audience came in later about also related to identity, I suppose, and good or bad feelings. Talking about self-harm, someone asked a question about how they're a mom, and sometimes people like say, hey, how would you feel if your kids saw you do that or knew that you were doing that? And that actually stirs a little bit of resentment because, you know, it's like, well, it's so hard not to have your identity just tangled up with these kids you had. And I totally get that, you know, like you don't exist except as this thing. So I think that's very interesting. And, you know, as usual, it turned into a really nice conversation. So I've preambled enough here. I'll just mention also that I think I'm going to be changing the Good Bad Brain Patreon up a little bit, just to be more of a general Jarrett Patreon. I feel like, you know, this by Good Bad Brain is definitely just one of the things that I do. And between the quarantine calisthenics, which have become pretty consistent, and other art and things that I like to create and have done over the years, I just might as well. I'm not going to stop doing Good Bad Brain. I love it. You know, keep doing the Sunday live streams. I hope if you've joined or if you want to join, they're really lovely. Sunday, 10 a.m., just talk to Dr. Nick about whatever people want to talk about. They've been nice. It's just a great resource, I think, because he's a legit researchy pro, you know? And it's free. It's just a way to talk. Anyway, thank you all so much. Thanks for sticking around if you're sticking around. And without further ado, I'll keep these because especially I'm dropping five today. I'm not going to do a whole big long intro to each one, obviously, saying what's up and hey, because I don't need to waste your time. But, you know, I'll drop these all and I'll get more steady with them. And I don't know, I bring back some brain breathers maybe. I think the brain breathers are nice sometimes. See, but people seem to say that they like those. It feels validating. All right, that's enough little ramble. putting the ramble and preamble. You know what I'm saying? All right. Thank you all so much. Check out patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain if you want to support there. Go to mygoodbadbrain.com if you want shirts or anything like that or quarantine gear. And check us out at youtube.com/jsleeper on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. That's where we'll stream podcasts each week. All right, y'all. That'll be that. Thanks so much. See ya. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well.
Whoa, postal truck's going by right now. Doesn't feel right.
What do you mean? Oh, we're live. Hello. Wait, what do you mean postals? Oh, like postal trucks? Like a bunch of them in a row?
No, that would have been fucking crazy.
That would be like extremely Jade Helm, you know?
I'd have to jump out and see what was going on if there was a caravan of postal trucks cruising by.
Do you remember Jade Helm, like that like conspiracy theory? That was like,
no.
That was like the UN was going to like... use some obscure UN law that Obama made to like come occupy, like to take guns and occupy parts of Texas.
Oh, no.
It's called Jade Helm because of the hats that they, you know, the UN helmets. And they were going to like use old Walgreens or something, like Walmarts, and they were like turning them into camps. I love that stuff. I really wanted to make like a whole like web series about like a.
Yeah.
About, like,
you heard some of the like. Reopen protester, MAGA protesters were talking about the new world order and this other. I mean, it's just
there's so much. It's so bizarre to like someone was like one of the signs I saw literally said profits over people. Like they're holding, and you're like, are you? It's just so strange to see like trolling evolve into, I guess, like a worldview. You know?
Yeah.
And
right.
Not in like a fun, I mean, I like to troll.
A sincerely felt, if not considered, worldview. I mean, the other thing I just think, you know, like our education is just so, system of education is just so far behind what people need to know. Like people, I'm sorry, people can read, and this is someone who loves to read the classics, and I had like a very traditional classical education, you know, like I had to read the Greeks in college, you know, which I love. I think everyone should do that. But people need to know now how to read and evaluate a news article.
Yes.
And how to like evaluate basic statistics. Like these are the things that people need to graduate high school knowing. They don't really need to read like fucking Jane Eyre, you know, they can do that later. But they need to know how to like look at a graph and be like, this is bullshit, or like read a news article and be like, this seems like nonsense.
Yeah, how to vet sources and stuff like that. Some modicum of like
basic critical, like internet literacy and critical thinking. I would much rather have like people learn that shit than read Crime and Punishment. Although I love Crime and Punishment, they can read that later.
Hold on, I forgot to do this part. Hi, everybody. Now we're here. Hi. Now we're here. Sorry. I forgot to transition us from the pre-show screen to the, it'll pop over in just a second. Hold on. But it's whatever. Now we're live. Yeah.
Just quick question. Maybe if anyone's watching, I'm curious about what they think also. Have you seen that show Midnight Gospel on Netflix?
No, I haven't heard of it.
You're gonna love it. It's bonkers.
What is it?
It's like a podcast, but set to completely trip the fuck out animation. So it's,
is it a Spanish show?
No, it's not Spanish. It's like the guy has a universe simulator, and every episode he like launches himself into a different planet in a different body and has a conversation with somebody interesting. Cool. And it's set to just completely bonkers, like, you know,
animation. Oh yeah, this looks awesome. I'm very
excited. The first one was Dr. Drew, and it's hilarious.
Is it?
Yeah, but they're great. Yeah, there's one with Damian Echols. I mean, it's kind of like I can't remember the guy's name who is the creator, but he actually has a very sophisticated understanding of Buddhism and Buddhist principles. I mean, he's obviously a serious student and practitioner. So he taught the guy who created it. I think it's the guy who – I don't want to get it wrong. I think it's the guy who did –
Ward?
Yes.
Yes, that's he does Adventure Time and stuff like that.
Yeah, so he is very clearly has studied a lot of Buddhism. I recommend it to everyone.
Emily said she's very excited to see the show. The creator of Adventure Time made it. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. Great,
y'all. I don't really have like topics or anything today. If you guys have any questions or things you want to bring up, feel free to pop them into the chat and we'll respond as we go. But otherwise, this is just kind of like a hang session and saying what's up. I was going to hijack some of it about some emotional processy kind of things. Cause I was having this might seem so, I was like laughing at the notion of asking the question. Cause it's so like therapy, but I think, valuable, which was like, why can't I feel love? But also kind of seriously, the thought I was basically it's comes from this thing happened the other day, which, Rogue will know about it. And so, I've been doing that course in calisthenics, which is like so nice, you know, it's been like this nice thing. We do it at noon every day, these workouts, whatever. And the group got together and made this really beautiful like video of like 15 or so of them that unbeknownst to me. And they're all like all over the world. Like there's people in Germany and like all over the US and they're just like doing a move and they go nothing left in the tank. And because I guess that's the thing that I say all the time without like realizing when we're doing the workouts. And it was just so nice, made me very emotional. I was like crying about it and like feeling very like, wow, that's so cool to see all these people. But then every time when people are like nice to me throughout my whole life, like as long as I can remember, at least if they say nice things to me or are nice to me or express love, even with Allie and stuff, like something in me just like shuts off completely, you know, just like feels very numb. Like I try not to be rude. I used to be so rude without thinking about it. Like I remember when I was I did this play when I was a teenager. I think about this moment often because I was like, what a fucking idiot I was. But not, it's a very small thing, but it's like after a show of this play that I did, this person, I was like only a teenager in it, and it was like a professional show, so it was like very cool for me. And somebody else who was like a friend of a colleague said like, you were so good in the show, or what really great job. And I just said, oh, acting's all bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? Nothing anybody ever said nice to me. I had to like disregard it completely. I was just like, I don't know. But anyway, so I'm just kind of curious if there's anything that exists or is, you know, known about like that kind of weird reaction to kindness or affection where I, you know, because I don't know, I feel like it's bad. It's like I, you know what I mean? It's like the inability to receive, not just bad for me, but it's like impolite and also like prevents you from engaging with people. And like, I just don't know how I'm supposed to, that's the feeling, is like, I don't know how I'm supposed to react, but I know that I'm like uncomfortable. You know what I mean? And it just feels like numb. It just feels like there's like this weird distance between myself and the loving feeling or thought that somebody's trying to give me. I can believe bad things all day long, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I think there are a lot of ways to, so, well, okay. So first of all, I think what you're describing is relatable. And I imagine many people can relate to that. Or have had similar experiences, right? Where it's kind of like you're trying to distance yourself from a compliment so that you don't have the discomfort of feeling like either good about yourself, which can feel uncomfortable sometimes, or acknowledging that there's something good about you, which can feel uncomfortable. Or you don't want to seem like you're stroking your ego, right? Which right. could also feel uncomfortable. But then in the act of rejecting the compliments, you actually are kind of insulting the other person, like dismissing their view.
Yeah, completely. Right? And you're like, I always felt like self-hatred is like as narcissistic or more so than self-love. Like,
yeah,
I don't even think it's the right word. Like, self-love is like really hard to understand because like the narcissism is like of the notion of, I think we hear the term self-love and people think it means like having a crush on yourself, which it shouldn't. It's like, I always think of it as like, I try to describe it, at least this is my understanding, of like having a space for love to live inside of you, like having a cultivated, the image I always have in my mind is like, if there's a place for a garden, and if I don't keep a little bit of love there, then I won't be able to receive any, and I won't be able to give any. Like, I need a place where it lives. Otherwise, it will be taken over by the self-hate, and that'll just poison anything that comes in or goes out.
So, yeah. Well, I think that's a nice metaphor. And again, there are a couple of ways to approach this, but I think they all kind of emerge from the wellspring of Buddhist principles, whether or not people know that they're applying those principles. So I would say it like this, like the simplest way is, I think the answer there is mindfulness, in the sense of observing and describing your experiences and then your urges to react non-judgmentally. So literally that would be putting what happens in the form of a sentence in your mind, even if it means you have like a delayed response. So somebody pays you a compliment and you're like, this person just complimented my performance. I'm feeling the urge to like dismiss that compliment, but my values are telling me I should just say thank you. Thank you.
Got it.
You know, even if it's that slow and weird in the beginning. So the kind of Western way to kind of describe maybe how to go about that is to just validate first. Like, yeah, I'm not comfortable receiving compliments, and you could maybe investigate why if you want to do that. You know, you could come up with some theories that might fit your learning history of why that's the case. And then you might want to think about, like, well, what are my values around this issue? And if, you know, and then based on your kind of assessment of your values around that issue, use mindfulness to narrate when it comes up and then redirect your response towards the kind of values oriented action. And that's going to feel clunky and uncomfortable, of course, because it's a new way of responding. But then, you know, over time, you'll grease the groove of that process and it'll become more natural. So that's kind of like the Western mechanical way of thinking about it. But from like a Buddhist perspective, I would say, you know, you talked about the kind of twin extremes of like narcissism and then like self-deprecation to the extreme. And that's, I think, totally right. Both of those have the effect of reinforcing the ego, right? Reinforcing this idea of like selfhood.
Right.
But in the Buddhist context, there is like this third path, the middle path, which is like, yes, you know, I call myself me, but really that's just shorthand for the like meeting place of sensory experience and interpretive software in the brain. That sensory experience and interpretive software, those things kind of crash together long enough, they're evolved just like a shorthand sort of consciousness that I just call me, that feels stable. But really what it is just like this unbroken time trajectory of experiences and interpretation, and that just feels like a thing that's me. But it's actually like this process of engagement between these two things. And so if you think about it like that, then it's kind of like, so, you know, it, from one perspective, it's like, yeah, I'm me. Cause I'm like, I'm the one driving the car and I'm the one saying thank you. And I'm the one cooking the food. But really that's like this process of causes and conditions and a whole collection of systems and actions all interacting together in the world. And I just call that me. And so if you think of it in that way, it kind of like, for me anyway, if you practice thinking about it in that way, it really turns the volume down on all the intensity of stuff. Because you're like, well, this is just, you know, one ping in my lifelong trajectory of interactions between my processing consciousness, which is comprised of all these different elements, and the external stimuli I'm receiving. And in this moment, like I'm, this experience is being produced and it feels like a little uncomfortable, but it's kind of like, well, you know, it becomes less sort of intense. And so it's a way of turning down the ego from the extremes of self-grasping and also self-hating, you know?
Yeah. I do think, I do feel like a robot. Like, I think I do a little bit of the thing you're talking about, maybe already, which is probably positive, of being like, of just sort of narrating the experiences I'm having in a sort of clumsy stream of conscious way, which is fine. I think there's just a way of maybe editing that a little bit better too, so it's not as again, like self-indulgent, I guess, and self like,
yeah.
I think the trick, it seems to me, even the self-narrating pause reaction can also get trapped in this cycle of like rumination of like what's going on inside my head, you know?
Right. And I think the key there is like one bare description. Like you don't need a lot of adjectives, you know?
Oh, bear. I thought you were saying bear, like bear it, like handle it. No, like bear, B-A, I see, yes, threat, like threat, yeah. Bear.
Without accoutrements, right? So bear description and non-judgmental language. Like if you do it with judgmental language, then you are literally practicing rumination. So it's critical that you don't allow non-judgmental language to go unexamined. It's kind of like in the Buddhist text, they call it being a guard at the palace gate. You can think about it like being a bouncer at the door of a nightclub. Like, don't fucking let everybody in, you know?
Yes, I've never heard that.
Don't let the riffraff in. Don't let the judgments in. Don't let the kind of expounding, you know, looping ego supporting sentences in. Don't think back to how this is like other times. No, stay in the moment. What's happening right this second, and nobody else gets in. And if you find them in there, because they will sneak in, you kick them the fuck out.
That reminds me, I know we said last week we were going to do a meditation this week. I did meditation yesterday on quarantine calisthenics, and I was going to do it again today. Are you available at noon? Would you like to come do it at noon?
Sure, yeah, I can hop on at noon.
Is that okay? Usually I do quarantine calisthenics. We go from like noon to, we'll do it on Instagram. I think I can share, like, I haven't tried it yet, but you can do like a request to join.
You know, I'm not on Instagram right now, but.
Oh, at all?
No.
All right, well, maybe there's a way we can figure it out. But that'd be nice, because I've been doing that. We're going to do it again today. And just all the stuff you're talking about was making me think about it, because I was thinking about the, like, you know, let thoughts, like, be a horse, just don't ride it. Like, let it gallop through your mind, but don't ride. There's, like,
Great. Yeah.
I learned about, I do like this like Qigong sort of thing that I learned in Kung Fu when I was like 16. And it's like my favorite way to meditate. But that would be nice to do. I didn't mean to like jump so hard to another topic. But if you are available, that would be cool. I did it for, we did it like a 20 minute one yesterday, which I was like probably the longest I've sat and meditated.
Yeah, that's long.
Cool. It was cool, man. It's like, it's trippy. I'm also trying to figure out what's wrong with my body. Like I have this thing keeps going numb in my shoulders, but there's like nothing to do about it. I was thinking like that's the next quarantine thing that Allie and I were like, let's get into acupuncture. Maybe we could just do some at home acupuncture. Like, just, can we go order some needles, start stabbing around and see what happens?
Yeah,
I don't know.
We get some powers or something. Who knows what could happen?
No, but that is really helpful. Just it's kind of weird that like the tool of that sort of Buddhist DBT whatever thing seems to kind of just like apply to whatever, you know, just like you can just pause, narrate your experience without value and with bare language. And
I mean, to me, you know, the Buddhists, and again, I'm familiar with the Tibetan tradition, so it's, I think, you know, people might say other things about other traditions, but the Tibetan tradition is a pretty,
oh, you there?
Like, it's not so much like Zen, where there's like the koan that you kind of break your consciousness against because it resists interpretation. The Tibetan style is highly interpretive and academic.
Wait.
So I like.
Wait, what's the first? You kind of broke up for the first half. What was the first half? There's the Tibetan one. What's the koan one?
Oh, Zen. So like in Zen, there's less. I'm not as familiar with it, so people can correct me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is that there's less overt, like, academic interpretation. It's more like, you know, using things like the koan to resist the brain's urge to get in and unpack and understand, and to frustrate the urge to do that until it is revealed for something without inherent reality that just dissolves, you know. But in the Buddhist tradition, in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, that dissolving under analysis is like a highly structured, regimented system of, like, academic philosophical system, you know?
Yeah. That's so cool. I didn't know that. Well, what's the koan? Is the koan like the repeating, like, is that like having a mantra?
The koan is like one of those, it's something like, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around, does it make a noise? Like, something that's unanswerable.
Almost like aphorisms.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, that's interesting. That's right. Zen Koan, right? That's like, yes. And then the Koan brothers. And then so in Tibet, I didn't know that either. Maybe, like, that'd be a fun thing to do if you want to, like, do like a primer on Tibetan Buddhism or something. I'm going to spring that on you, but like maybe like next week or one of these weeks, that'd be like a cool episode. It's just because I've never heard the structured. I'd be curious to know what the structured thing is. I mean, Emily said, I put an alarm on my phone to narrate my feelings every day since Nick recommended it a few episodes ago. I think it's helpful, which is pretty.
That's great. I'm really glad to hear that. I think the key is just to remember to do it in the present moment and without judgment.
Oh, that's a good point. Wait, hold on. Sorry, someone's saying, yes, that's true. Hold on. Okay, maybe that's true. Someone was like saying, like, half of us are here now, and maybe we can just do the meditation on this again, but just at that time when people. Okay, we'll figure that out. I'll figure it out when it happens. All right, someone sent a question, which I'm gonna read, and I haven't read it yet. We'll read it out loud. Okay, I've struggled with self harm since the early 2000s, and despite finding healthier coping skills, I still find it very difficult to stop. I've talked about this before with some people that I trust, and the common response I get is, but you're a mom. What if your kids saw it? While obviously that is a concern that I take very seriously, and I've always been very secretive about it, I can't help but feel pissed off by it. It's very difficult to keep your sense of personal identity as a parent already, and often feels like I'm nothing more, like I'm not even a person. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that I feel there's a very strong addiction-type problem with self-harm, and I'd like to know if that's actually a thing or if it's all in my head.
Okay, so there, good question. There's a lot there. Things can be real and all in your head. I mean, I would just add that caveat.
Yeah.
So here's the way that I approach self-harm, which is from a DBT perspective, okay, in terms of how to treat it. But actually, so yeah, self-harm, typically we think about it as serving a couple of functions, and I would encourage this questioner to think about for themselves, what is the function of self-harm for you? For example, sometimes the function is to regulate emotions. Like, you're experiencing such intense emotions that if you self-harm, the endorphin release associated with self-harm helps to regulate your emotions. Okay. So that can be one way. Another way is to serve as a communication behavior, right? Like if you have a skills deficit where you're not able to, or you're in a situation where, you know, people receiving your communications don't help you as a result of their limitations and your skills deficit, that self-harm can serve as a communication behavior, right? To signal to people, hey, I'm in a lot of distress. Now, if you're secretive about it and you're hiding it from people, that there's also a lot of shame involved, of course. That may indicate that it's more of an emotion regulation strategy rather than a communication behavior. But you know, you got to think for yourself, what is the function of this behavior for you? And really think about it. I would also encourage you to visit a therapist, try to make an appointment with a therapist who can support you and who's a specialist in self-harm. I think it's really, you know, people often do work on it by themselves, but if you're in a position where you can see a therapist, I really encourage you to do that because you deserve help and support. And there are people who specialize in helping and supporting people to stop self-harming. Okay. So from a DPT perspective, when we work with self-harm, like when I work with someone who self-harms, which, you know, I've done many times, the reason why we're so concerned about self-harm behavior as therapists is because it is a major risk factor for suicidality. Okay. And because you are practicing harming the body, which makes it easier to harm the body in more serious and more intense ways. Okay. It's also possible to make a mistake, especially if you're, you know, drinking alcohol or using other substances. It's easy to harm yourself more than you thought you were and to put yourself at risk for dying, you know, bleeding out or something like that. So when we work in self-harm, what we do is, we just say to the person, look, if you want to do this treatment with me, the thing we're going to focus on to the exclusion of all else is ending self-harm or suicidal behaviors. And we can't talk about anything else, like a fight with your partner, or the kids bothering you, or other things in your life that are stressful. We can't talk about any of that stuff until we eliminate the self-harm behavior. So we won't do anything in therapy until you commit to stopping self-harm. And so that will cause you to think, well, how committed am I to stopping this self-harm behavior? And I would encourage you, you know, you got to evaluate for yourself. Is this something that you're kind of like, I don't think it's that big a deal. And like, I just do it a little bit. Or is it something you really want to stop? Because to me, I want to work with someone who is committed to stopping that behavior and using other skills to regulate effectively and appropriately. So, you know, you got to ask yourself that. Again, it's much better to do this with a therapist, okay? And then you need to prepare yourself because when you stop, when you commit to stopping self-harm, which I urge you to do, I urge you to eliminate that from your life, okay? Because it's so dangerous and so damaging to your sense of self. When you make that commitment, you must be ready for an upsurge in your emotional discomfort because nothing will work as fast as self-harming. You're going to have to learn to tolerate the distress that's going to exist in the gap between your urge to self-harm and your use of other strategies. So rather than having like a sharp drop-off in the discomfort, if you're using it to regulate emotions, you're going to experience an upsurge and a slow tailing off. Of those unpleasant emotions. And that's going to be that way until you get really good at the other skills. So to sum that up, I would urge you to work with a therapist who specializes in self-harm, like a DBT therapist. I would urge you to diagnose the function of that behavior for yourself. And then I would urge you to make a strong commitment that you are going to stop that behavior and use alternative strategies. And if you go to like dbtselfhelp.com, you can see distress tolerance would be the skill set you could use to do kind of like learn kind of crisis survival, emotional crisis survival skills to replace that self-harm behavior because you have to replace it.
Yeah, that is interesting. That all tracks. One thing I was wondering about was like, you know, well, one thing that made me think of was just like I used to, you know, the like white boy rage punching walls thing and stuff like that. I do
that count.
I do think part of that was the same, like the shock of pain and destruction and expression would just like make me feel normal again. And be like, it's fine, it's over. I didn't mean to be so scary. It's fine. I'm just punching the wall. I was just trying to get it out, you know. But like that's not really unacceptable. I was wondering, is there an aspect of like, can there be an aspect because like they asked, you know, about this feeling of their personal identity versus being a parent. And sometimes they feel like they don't even exist, you know, like, is there an aspect of like, you know, you do it to like, I don't know, almost as like claiming yourself. You know, I mean, I feel like self-destructive behaviors can be like a thing to be like, I exist and I do whatever I want with me, you know?
Sure, sure. And I think that gets at the necessity to diagnose the function of the behavior. So if the yeah. function of the behavior is to give you a sense of separate identity, because maybe you feel like your identity has been
Oh no. Hold on. Let's see if we get you back.
Like you probably need to be setting boundaries with your kids and your partner or your family to create some space for yourself. Like that's where I'm, you know, I would be going. Is there a skills deficit around boundary setting, around carving out time for yourself? And maybe there are some skills deficits around feeling like you can say no to things, feeling like you can say, I need you to do this because I need some time for myself. Maybe that brings up shame and guilt, which are probably emotions you're not comfortable, I'm guessing, sharing with other people or regulating. So I could be way off base, but this would just be consistent with my clinical experience. Okay. Yeah. So it's probably the self-harm is probably masking skills deficits in other areas, maybe interpersonal skills deficits.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm not a parent, so I can't speak from experience, but I've worked with many parents who identify this dynamic that they feel like their personal identities have kind of gone away. Or they don't have access to those anymore because they're in such a demanding parental role.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would imagine, looking at some of those deficits is going to be important as well.
Yeah, that sounds very real. I mean, that whole, like, this is not my beautiful life, this is not my beautiful house thing, you know? Like, it feels very true.
Yeah.
That's part of, like, aging in general, I guess. But, like, it's very easy to, like, look around and, I mean, that's a glib way to say it. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think we all experience that thing of, like, what the fuck? How did I get here? And you can figure out all the steps of like things you picked along the way to be like, no, I like that. I like that. I like these things. But you can very easily feel like, do I even exist? What are my desires? What, you know, that kind of thing.
I also think that if you are not in the habit, which most of us aren't, of acting mindfully, it can feel even more, you can feel even more alienated from your life because you may not actually have made those choices. You may have kind of reacted. Stimuli may have come up and you've like reacted to it and gotten pinballed into a certain trajectory and not made a whole lot of intentional decisions about getting there. And that can, you can feel like trapped and stuck. That's why I think, again, mindfulness is so important, because if you're not mindfully evaluating your experience and then making a decision about how to respond to it, you are just reacting and getting kind of pinballed by your reactions into a trajectory that you didn't choose. And that can feel really fucking shitty.
Yeah. And then something you can choose is like, well, maybe I'll hurt myself and I can like pick that.
I think it's often less intentional than that in my experience. Again, I think it's more like, I don't want to feel this way anymore, and I can feel different really fast by doing this.
That tracks so much for me.
I don't have to have that hard conversation with my parents, with my spouse, with my partner, with my kids. Like, hey, I need you guys to fucking change your behavior, and I need to change my behavior, and we need to practice those structural interactional changes over time in order to get the whole system to behave differently. That's hard, and it takes work, and it takes repeated efforts over time. It's much faster to do the self-harm, but the result is you never get those changes you want. They just persist.
Yeah, that sounds like, yeah, I don't know, that's that tracks. That's definitely like why I feel like that looking for an outlet, that trying to avoid the gradual change, the looking for something that just sharply brings my reality into one point of focus is definitely, I don't know, where any sort of risk-seeking behaviors I've had, you know, stuff like that, I feel like, I don't know, they say that, like, I was watching Ozark, you know, it's great, so good, but there's bipolar character in this third season. And I just like, I think he's so good. I think he's so good at acting bipolar. And I mean, my dad was bipolar, and I've been worried that I'm bi- I don't know. But like, that's the crazy thing about it. Allie, when I were watching, she's like, does it remind you of your dad? And I was like, yeah, but it also just reminds me of me and just like how strange it is to try to distinguish. But like a lot of like the, some of the ADHD stuff, some, like there were things that they said, like risk seeking behavior and blah, blah, that I was like, yeah, that all tracks for like, you know, you just go drive your motorcycle too fast, maybe while you're drunk or something like that. And things that you would do because like that would put you into like now, like there was no ruminating. There was no, you know, figuring out the future.
It's also very fun to do that, even though it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It just did so much. It was such an extreme experience that you were just so present and being in the present. That extreme was like way easier than, I don't know, than where my brain goes when I don't have some immediate threat to my life.
Totally. Totally.
Well, yeah, I don't know. That's, I hope that for our listeners, you know, I hope that.
I hope this person will follow up with us if that's not tracking with their experience. But please, if you're able to, please do try to find a DBT therapist, because it's really, it's like the specialty of that treatment protocol, and I think it could really, really help.
I know this is gonna be like too simplifying, but it does. When I did an episode a long, long time ago with my buddy Zeke, who's been in AA for a long time, he's talking about this thing called the God shaped hole that like they you know, they'd refer to, and and I thought that was really striking, because that came up in conversation when I was talking about when I went and did Al-Anon, and I looked at the wall, because a lot of those AA, you know, a lot of those 12 step rooms are like shared by various 12-step programs, so you can look around and see the like tenets of the different, and you're like, wow, they're all the same. Like, it doesn't matter if it's sex and love or narcotics or alcohol, they're all like the same. And he was like, yeah, it's the God-shaped hole. It's like everyone has the same thing. It's just like, what are you putting into it? And like, I feel like you know, whether or gambling or whatever, it's like the same thing. And I don't know. I think my brain tends to maybe over analogize things, like maybe makes everything is everything in my mind. But I really do think that that like it always seems like all this mental health stuff, a lot of the behaviors are coping mechanisms with the same root. There's a similar root issue of like related to like who I am and what I am and why I am or something like that. And then you're just coping with that with different strategies, you know what I mean? Or your body's like trying to find equilibrium with different strategies, and just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. I think I would go even a little farther, and I would say I think the reason we need to deal with those like thoughts is because they trigger emotions. You know, emotions. Learning to regulate your emotions in an effective way is really the root of therapy. Learning to manage and regulate your emotions, developing some expertise in managing and regulating your own emotions in a way that allows you to do the things that you want to do. I think that's really that is the key of therapy. More important than some kind of epiphany or understanding, it's regulating your emotions. Because if you didn't have any emotions, then you wouldn't need to be in therapy, and you would probably have a shitty, boring life, because, you know, well, there would be nothing going on. But understanding and kind of, developing a sort of personal narrative, all these things, I think the reason they're so important is because they help us to regulate emotions and make sense of emotions. So that's my take. You know, other people have different takes, but that's my experience. That's my take.
Someone said, two things. We got a question. I'll just read this thing first, though. I struggled with self-harm, and my therapist, every time I told him I had cut, he would ask me, what purpose did it serve? And I never really knew what the answer was until recently. I had drawn a picture of myself with a speech bubble with a scribble, and the scribble goes inside my head, and then I fall to the ground with a dark scribble taking over my body. We talked about this drawing, and I realized that I was drawing that I couldn't express my emotions and how I was feeling. And so self-harm was a result of me unable to express myself. So now when I get the feeling of self-harming, I think, can I express my feelings in a different way? And that's helped.
So that's like a perfect example of the self-harm behavior covering a skills deficit, right? And I, the reason I say skills deficit is because it's different from you're fucked up and there's something wrong with you. There's not. There's just a skills deficit. And the skill deficit that you had was describing your emotional experience. And why on earth would you know how to do that unless you had been taught how to do that? It's difficult to do it. So it's not that you're fucked up. It's that you didn't learn how to regulate your, how to describe your emotions, and describing your emotions in a way that feels real is a critical determinant of regulating them. Even just knowing the words. So like sometimes when people come in and they like, especially if they like,
Wait, hold on.
List of emotion words. Wait, like,
slow back. Oh, go back like 30 seconds.
Yeah. So like sometimes what you need to do is just give people like lists of emotion words so that they have more words than mad, sad, glad, whatever. Like there's like 50 words for angry. And like, it's important to know them because, you know, frustrated and mad aren't enough, you know? Like knowing the granular language to use makes it feel more manageable and real.
Yes.
So it makes total sense to me what this person is saying, that the function there was to regulate emotion. And the deficit was that they didn't have the language yet to describe the emotion.
That's something I think as a society, like if we could just remove our tendency to inject like negative morality into ignorance, you know, like saying like if we, like one thing I think about a lot, or just the injection of morality into everything, like into our calculations. Like one thing that's very frustrating is talking about food, nutrition, and exercise with people is like, it's like my friend Lizzie said it really well one time, was she was like, there's no such food. There's no such thing as like food that's like bad for, like, what did she say? It was like, the point was like carbs aren't, like sugar isn't bad. It just is a molecule that reacts in a way. Like, you know, you're not a bad person for eating certain things. It's like, if you could just remove the sense of like good, bad morality from like everything, and then just go like, no, it's like a calculation. There's like, it's just like a way physics works. It's like molecules interact with each other and do these things. You're not a good person or a bad person because you exercised or didn't, or ate this and ate this instead, you know?
Yeah. The moralizing of all behaviors for, it's just an example of this cognitive shorthand. Like, what's the easiest shortcut for behavior is calling something good or bad. It's like the easiest and quickest shortcut for influencing behavior is to call something good or bad. And it just has zero relation to reality. It's
that's
makes
so
no sense to do that.
That's so, like, it has zero, like calling something good or bad has zero relation to reality is so good, because I definitely feel that way. Like my tapes start up, like when I don't know how to manage my feel, or I'm like, you fucking idiot. And that kind of a thing is, you know, when you're right, it's like, it's not my fault that like my little baby spirit never learned that thing, you know? Now I can try to learn it. I can try to, like, I'm more grown up. I can like try to teach, educate myself, or seek out resources. But there's no like, you're a fucking idiot and you're a dumb piece of shit because you didn't learn these coping mechanisms, you know?
Right. And also, like, that's why it's so important to, I mean, the fog of the like moral economy, the bullshit fake moral economy of good and bad that's foisted on us by our superficial, pedantic, silly media, it you must penetrate through that. So what does it mean to say, oh, I ate a whole pizza, I'm bad? What does that mean? How does your body feel? How does your body feel? What thoughts are you experiencing right now? What are the emotions that you're experiencing? Describe them. Describe them in granular detail without judgment. And that's the result of this, in this moment, of you eating the whole pizza. Not you being bad. What the fuck does that even mean? It doesn't have any meaning.
Right. Yeah, that's so.
For me, because I have a lactose problem, it would be like, well, now I feel like my stomach, it hurts.
Yes.
I'm having the thought that there's an undigestible ball of cheese in my stomach. I'm now having some thoughts, like I'm experiencing the thought that I shouldn't have done that. Why? Well, it's pointing back to the physical discomfort. Okay, it's really a physical discomfort problem that I'm having.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that mean I'm bad? No, I'm just physically uncomfortable right now. Yeah. Am I more spiritually and morally bad because of that?
Yeah.
It's craziness.
No, you are. You are. You're weak-willed. You're a weak-willed bitch, and you have no interest in any sort of self-preservation or kindness to yourself, which probably means you don't have any sense of kindness towards other people either. You know,
right.
If you're so irresponsible that you would do something like that to yourself, then probably you're a garbage piece of shit, toxic entity that spreads that to the world around you. Isn't that what your brain tells you? Isn't that the correct thing that your brain should be telling you because yeah. you ate pizza?
Right. I mean, like, how absurd is that? So
it's absurd.
Don't do that.
It's oh yeah, totally absurd. That's oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Ha 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 ha. I never do anything. That's totally absurd. Ha ha ha. All right. Somebody asked a question that I wanted to address. Someone said, following up on last week's quote, if you're worried about being smarter than your therapist, you're doing therapy wrong. Any tips on telling difference between they actually don't specialize in what I need help with and they aren't helping me in the way I want them to help? Am I just looking for some perfect fit that doesn't exist / is less important than just doing the work?
Okay, so this is a good question. There are a couple things, different strains braided together into this question. So one, you need to like your therapist. Give it some time, you know. But if you've gone to therapy like 4 times with the same person and you're like, this is just not a good fit, then don't see them anymore. Because the research indicates that most of what determines the outcome of therapy is the relationship with the therapist. Mm. It doesn't mean that you need to have like a chummy best buds relationship. It just means that the relationship needs to be working for you. And so you probably need to like them. Okay. Like at least you need to trust them. So that's important. Okay. And you should shop around like anything, any other care provider, you should fucking shop around until you find someone you like. 2, you should ask them, what is your specialty? What kind of issues and problems do you work with? And what have your outcomes been like? Mm-hmm. And what's your theoretical orientation? And if they're like, can't answer any of those questions, I wouldn't see that person. If I'm like, what's your theoretical orientation? And they're like, I just talk. Well, okay, I don't need you for that. So they should have a coherent answer to what their theoretical orientation is, what kind of training they've received, and what kind of problems they specialize in. They yeah. should be able to articulate that to you in a convincing way. And if they can't, I would find someone who can, because there are people who can. But then the other thing is, what the second part of the question was like,
tips on telling the difference between they actually don't specialize in what I need help with and they aren't helping me in the way I want them to help.
Yeah.
Am I just looking for a perfect fit that doesn't exist / is less important than just doing the work?
Well, okay. So the piece I wanted to get at there is how is it that you want them to help you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you get. Sometimes people come in and they're like, hey, I'm here. And it was such a huge step for me to just fucking get here. Like getting in this door took so much work that you can't see. I want you to make me feel better now. Like that happens a lot. And that's not going to work. So if that's what you want, then you need to adjust your kind of frame. If you're like, I want someone to teach me some skills and help me to learn these and apply these different skills so that I can start to change the parts of my life that aren't working for me. Well, then I think you're on the right track if it's more like that, you know? So the answer there is it depends. But mm-hmm. to kind of sum up, ask them about their theoretical orientation, ask them what kind of problems they work with and where they were trained, and, you know, let them convince you. 2, I think your orientation towards receiving help needs to be something like, I'm asking this person to help me make changes by learning skills and applying them effectively. Okay, that's kind of
yeah.
And then the third one is, yeah, I don't think there's a perfect fit, but you should have a positive sense of your relationship with your therapist. And if you've gone like 3 or 4 times and you don't have that, move on.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's no reason why the first person you see should be like the right one, you know?
That makes sense. Yeah, I totally feel that. I feel like it does kind of, it just keeps making me think of like seeking out a martial arts class is like there's so many different reasons you could be going to do martial arts. And like people who are really into like talking about how bullshit martial arts are, different martial arts are like, oh, that's useless or whatever. It's like there's also this other question of like, well, what are you going to the class for? Like, what do you want to do martial arts for? Like, if it's just like some of us, you just want to be able to be good at fighting. Sure. That's like how you start. But like, there's a lot of other very good reasons to be going to a martial arts class, like community or like internal mastery or to learn a beautiful way to move or whatever. There's like so many reasons that are not even related to the martial part, that are not even related to like the being good at fighting, that like, you know what I mean? But it demands a kind of like personal investigation. But also that personal investigation, I feel like if you've been around like martial arts enough and similar to therapy, is like you should be able to smell out when you're in a place that's like just a pseudo cult, that you're just like, oh, there's a bad vibe here. They're going to be like harassing me about like, where have you been? Why aren't you in class? In a shitty way and not in a, like a nice way, you know, things like that. I'm sure same thing with a therapist. If you go and like you said, they don't have a good answer about their pedigree, or they get annoyed that you ask about another pedigree, but their training, I think, is a better way to think of it. But it's not like an elitism thing. It's like
They should be non-defensive about that. They should be excited to tell you about it. Like when people would ask me that, I'd be like, oh, awesome. Like, you're going to start asking me this because you're going to get a lot, you know? But but if they're like defensive and weird about it, that's a major red flag to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this should not be this type of interaction. This is, And you know, perfect fit. Yeah, I don't really believe in a perfect fit for anything, but one that you can work, you know? Like, dude, sometimes I would be in Villains and I'd be like, oh my God, dude, when are we going to start drilling? Like, it's been like 40 minutes,
I know.
I fucking love Villains. And
I know,
I've never found anywhere that I like better than that.
It's funny because I do think about Villains in particular is a place that I've always felt like, I acknowledge that I love it and it was good for me because I had such a, and I do think part of it was because I already had a strong foundation in fundamentals and I trained for a long time before showing up there, that it does have a very, it's I think very, like the best school I've been to for people who have some, lexicon of jiu-jitsu already, because and I was like, this works for me really well because I like to break things down. I like to talk about it for a long time and then I like to roll, and they still do the hard rolling. But I was like, I could see being brand new here when like maybe all you should be doing is like drilling triangles and, you know, shrimping your ass off for like hours. It's like, I could see how that could be like frustrating, or being like, what's happening? You know, like so much of that is probably just noise when like you're going into like granular details about like crab rides and, you know.
Yeah. But, I mean, I have to say, when it was like inverted guards, I was just like, all right, I'm not.
And you're just like brand new. You're like,
just not going to do it.
That being said, I really like, I think, not to like keep talking about very specifically my jiu-jitsu school, but Nathan's approach is, I think, very innovative. And like, I'm curious to see how it plays out for some of the people who have like started at Villains, like if they do manage to like hack their way into like high technique things quicker, and if they're able to apply them more and more, because to me a lot of the high technique stuff is really hard to do without a foundation in the fundamental shit, because like you'll just get crushed on the fundamental shit before you even get to doing your very technical stuff. Anyway, someone said, thank you. I felt guilty, pretentious about thinking various folks didn't have a coherent theoretical framework. Oh, good. Glad to know it's okay to expect that, and that it doesn't mean necessarily that I'm avoiding hard work. Yeah, absolutely. There you go. That was just somebody who asked that question.
Yeah, I would just say two more things. One is, I really missed you guys. Say hi to Nathan. I like really miss that place so much.
You should pop in for the classes. The Zoom classes, I'm sure you'd be welcome if you wanted, Monday and Thursday nights.
Okay, I will do that. I'll do it on maybe on Thursday. I can do it.
They're really cool, and they're really like, I think you'll like them because they're so they're very like, it's just, I've never seen anybody else do anything like it. I think he's made a big impression on Damien as well. Like Damien popped in for that one class and stayed for like an hour and a half when he meant to stay for 20, and then he had him basically run it back, like do another seminar for the other owners of Damien Maia affiliates.
Oh, cool.
And it's really cool. I mean, like Nathan's really doing a cool shit, I think. I was like, dude, you could make this like a weird little series that people would like sign up for.
I I mean, you know, one thing no one could ever say about him is that he doesn't care about the students. You know, he really cares.
And he's just so, like, encyclopedic with, like, technical knowledge. And especially also him and JFig is, too, actually. They're an amazing pair. Like, their knowledge of... sorry, I'm just getting a discussion about my jiu-jitsu school, but like, just like their knowledge of competition history and matches people have had, and like finding examples of things. I was thinking when they were doing it last time, I was like, in like NFL or like, you know, football, like this is common where you have like
Watching the tape.
Yeah, like you have watching tape, and then you have like specialists who are like coaches and assistant coaches and whatever, who would like go over this stuff with people. And that it's interesting that in other like fight sports, yes, of course, at high levels, coaches, they review tape, and that's part of it for sure. But like that at a more consistent level, there's not a more sort of, I don't know if scholarly is the right word, but kind of is like that sort of approach to breaking the tape, talking about examples, trying to look for strategies, and not
it's
just...
For sure.
Yeah, not just like drilling and rolling forever and hoping you absorb it, you know, like.
The other thing I would just respond to this person about is like some people just value different things, right? Like some people want kind of an intellectual approach to their therapy. Like I kind of like that approach. And so, you know, sometimes I would get a patient who would do that, would kind of like quiz me. And then I would like explain my background and stuff. And they'd be like, oh, okay, this is like kind of what I wanted. Other times I've had people who were like not into my approach because it's like maybe it's a little bit too much like that, you know? So you'll, in the sense of fit, there are therapists who are more aligned with probably what it seems like, what I'm interpreting, it seems like you're looking for. So you'll find that person, you know?
Yeah, last thing I'll just read because I have to go to the bathroom really bad and we're already like 7 minutes from the end anyway, so it's fine, we'll call it. Someone said there who does QC with me, I like the way you describe getting rid of arm flab, really changed my perspective. So just backing up, made it practical rather than emotional. I just wanted to share this in because I changed my perspective of things. I started thinking things more about this, and I've noticed it in, it's interesting. Certainly there's plenty of total fucking maniacs in the fitness world, like who, you know, are have beautiful, you know, in the traditional sense bodies and just hate themselves and are maniacs about it and whatever. And you can totally poison your brain by like counting calories too much and getting like too deep down the thing and being like, oh, this part doesn't cut enough, you know, or whatever. Absolutely. I'm not saying like people who are in super good shape are like mentally healthy, because usually not. But I will say something that I was good for me when I started getting into physical fitness and sort of like body manipulation and shaping. And one thing I like about talking about bodies with friends who are also into that, who are into like either like hitting weight classes for martial arts or other sports, or into, you know, just body, like bodybuilder types. Like my friend Lizzie, who moved from being a powerlifter to like just for fun, was like, I want to do a figure show. I'm going to like try to just cut like a bodybuilder. The way they talk about their bodies with a lot less morality, and like it's like they're describing a horse or something like that, is so refreshing to talk to somebody and talk about your own body and their body as just like, it's not sexualized, it's not flirty, it's not like judgy in like a your spirit is bad way because you have like this body fat percentage or something like that. It's so refreshing. And then the way they approach like being like, no, if you want to change a part of your body, it's not about how disciplined or good a person you are or bad a person you are. It's like about inputs of you know, physical stimulus, and then a body's response to that stimulus, and then the sort of like molecules and chemicals you have inside of your body that contribute or detract from those body reactions to that stimulus.
Right.
It's just a function of, you know, physical stuff, like physical laws of nature. And it has nothing to do with if you're a good person or a bad person or a pretty person or an ugly person or like all this shit that we like add on to it. And that's like very refreshing, is to say like, if you, hey, if you want to get rid of arm flab, quote unquote, it's not, it's like, it's the same thing as like, one thing I always, that struck me and I get pedantic about sometimes, but I like, is like the infantilizing language, especially for, the marketing towards women in the fitness world of like slimming and like toning and shaping and all this nonsense, is like, you can hypertrophy. Yeah, you can hypertrophy or you can atrophy a muscle. That's it. You can't shape it, lengthen it, tone it. Like, you can't do those things. You know, so it's like this idea that, well, like, I don't want to get what?
Like, what is what? They just don't have meaning, those words. Like, no, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Physically, what does that mean? It describes a process that doesn't exist.
Right. It's just like this, it's nonsense to keep you, like, to sell you shit, basically.
Unhappy. Yeah.
Unhappy.
You don't buy things when you're happy.
Right. And that,
here's
like,
the word. That,
yeah.
Like, one sentence that I heard that I really like, I forget who said it, but it helped me as I kind of evolve and get older and things change, where it's just like, I want the body to serve the mind. I don't want my mind to serve my body. Like, what the fuck is this sick slavery of that? You know, I want my body to serve my mind.
Yes. 100%. For me, I think my overwhelming, and maybe this is a negative way to put, but it's just the one that stuck in my head and I still have, is like, my physical practices are generally about making my body feel less like a prison than it does. That, like, I want to be able to move relatively freely. I want to be able to, like, if I want to climb a thing, I can climb a thing. If I want to jump, I can jump. If I want to, like, stretch weird, I can stretch weird. The fact that I can't just do backflips on command bothers me, but that's fine. You know, I just, the more I can reduce, and that includes pain in my body, I want to reduce pain in my body as much as possible. And then allow my body to, like, create positive sensations for myself. So that includes eating things that taste good and feel good and are fun and whatever, but then also limiting the discomfort I cause myself with my own finicky IBS or whatever, and trying to balance those things. But just as much as I can treat my vessel, I've also kind of had this idea of, like, my body's not me, but it's mine. And that approach applies to my brain as well, that, like, it's just my Gundam. It's like my meat mech that I walk around in. And so I want to take care of that and try to, like, steward that well and be grateful for it and understand that it's my only vessel for receiving my universe and having emotions and thoughts and physical sensations. So I want to do my best to take care of it without over-identifying with it as, like, me and what kind of, like, if I'm good or bad person, you know. But anyway, that's my little mini rant about that. Okay, guys, thank you so much for being here. We're gonna call it for today. Thanks, Dr. Nick. We'll figure out about noon. We're still gonna do meditation for quarantine calisthenics if you guys want to be there. All this great quarantine gear exists. If anybody wants to get that at mygoodbadbrain.com or my good bad brain stuff. What?
I'm going to order one.
It's cool, man. The mask, I'm going to make a black one today because Nathan,
want that.
Yeah, Nathan wanted a black one and I was like, all right, I'll go figure it out.
Dibs on that.
Okay, yeah, I'll let you know. I'll pop it up later today. Maybe I'll just do it right after this. It takes like a little bit to set it up. But then we're going to do meditation and I'm going to see, I'll talk to you, Nick, if we can figure out, because some people have asked about doing a Zoom class, like if we could switch. The idea was floated there of switching quarantine calisthenics instead of just IG Live to like a Zoom so we could all be in like a gallery. And that would be a nice approach to try to do for the meditation as well, to try to like Zoom that.
I'm highly Zoom networked. So yeah, let me know.
Okay, so maybe I'll look into that. We'll definitely do it in an hour either way. See you guys. And then tomorrow, this is quarantine stuff, but we start phase two, which I'll talk more about later, which is where I'm changing up the programming because doing like full body every day was getting too hard for me. And I think we're limiting our gains. So we just need to build some rest in and a little bit more intelligent programming. But okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Nick, for being here. Thank you guys.
Yeah.
I'll post this week. You can go to patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain if you like to throw some cash at the whole project. And otherwise, yeah, whatever. We'll see you next week. And noon every day, we're still doing quarantine calisthenics if you want to hop in, and we're going to meditate today at noon. So see you then. All right. Thank you all. I'm ending now. What? Self-care. Hydrate. Be well. Bye. Right. Thanks for joining us, guys. My Good Bad Brain is a production of Mind Jam Media, my little media company. Thanks to Coda for making this theme song with me. And that's it. MyGoodBadBrain.com. Patreon.com/MyGoodBadBrain. You're the best. Have a good one. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well.
Thank you. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.